Yes, we're back on the Bursport Scottish Football Podcast with me, Hamish Carton, as we look back on 5/6 of the opening weekend of the Scottish Premiership season. More on that in just a wee second. First off, I'll introduce Callum Fisher.
Evening, Hamish. How are you? Good to be back after, well, as you say, the first 5 out of 6 games of the new season.
Yes, indeed. And all the way from the Highlands, Johnny Clark.
Yep, Hamish, it's a little bit strange to be back. I mean, it must have been a good year or so since I was on the podcast, so thanks for inviting me back on. Pleasure.
January 2019, I believe, although don't ask me how I know that.
How do you know that?
Don't ask me, I don't know.
Okay.
But great to have you on, mate, and we're running a wee bit low in numbers, so we thought we'd get in one of the substitutes, which is kind of fitting because obviously this was the first weekend when teams could make 5 substitutions in Scottish football. What did we think overall of things like that and players' fitness and stuff like that, Fisher?
From what I've seen, obviously the game that I saw kind of or had the most attention to was obviously the Rangers game, and Aberdeen used more substitutes than Rangers. I didn't think it really disrupted the kind of flow of the game. Obviously it's 5 substitutes, but you can only make 3 stoppages, so I didn't feel like it had too much of an overreaching impact. And I think actually, whilst the pace and maybe sharpness wasn't there, I still thought the quality of most of the games was pretty good. The player fitness was pretty good. You know, I think when the English football came back, was it the Arsenal Man City game? You had like three or four Arsenal players kind of pulling up in that first game. That there was obviously very little of that we saw. So I think overall, obviously the fact that teams have been playing pre-season friendlies has obviously helped. But I certainly thought the fitness of the players was good. It was just kind of the sharpness and maybe lack of proper match fitness was quite telling. But you would obviously expect that after what's been probably the longest layoff the majority of these players have ever had in their careers.
What would you give the opening weekend out of 10, Johnny?
I enjoyed the games. I'd probably give it... I'll give it a 7 out of 10. It's a solid start. I think, as Fisher sort of alluded to there, looking back, obviously the Bundesliga, when I watched that when it started, and it was reasonably slow to begin with. The English Premiership I thought was very slow to begin with. I think Scotland's it feels more normal from a starting point. It certainly feels more up to pace. Watching, I don't know if that was maybe just obviously because I watched Rangers and Aberdeen and Celtic today in full. I don't know if that's maybe got a part to play. Obviously a high intensity game all the time, Aberdeen Rangers, you could play the game after 3 years of no football, I'm sure they'd still be going at it, so maybe there's a little bit to do with that as well. But no, it certainly felt, to me, it felt pretty normal, a reasonable standard certainly for the first week back. I have to say I'm not a huge fan of the 5 subs thing. I understood it, I do understand it as well from a fitness point of view to start with, but I hope it's not long term. I do think it probably does favour the big clubs, the Old Firm in particular as well. We've obviously got a very deep squad, so you've seen that with Klamala coming on. Was he 4th or 5th sub today? Comes on and scores, and I'm sure that'll happen quite often if 5 subs are allowed, so I'm not a big fan of that, I have to say.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. I think it's one of these things that we're going to see probably sticking around in football, though. Thankfully, the only positive we can take is that water breaks haven't been implemented in Scottish football.
Definitely.
I was watching the FA Cup final yesterday, and a really good game. Probably not played in, you know, massively balmy conditions at Wembley. I get that it's, you know, the start of August, but we'd be playing football in August usually. And, you know, these water breaks completely interrupting the flow of the game. So well done to the SPFL and the clubs for not implementing that. I agree that the subs rule probably favours the big teams. For that reason, I'm kind of against it. But I suppose in terms of the fitness and the fact that teams are going to be playing so many games over the course of the next 9 or 10 months, it probably does make a bit of sense. Right, where do you want to start, Fisher?
Well, I suppose we may as well get, from my point of view, get the Celtic game out of the way, given it was fairly routine for them, and it's literally just finished about, 20, 25 minutes ago?
Yeah, we are doing this right off the back of the game, just trying to get this weekend preview out as soon as we can. We do realise that there's one game still to be played in the opening weekend, Ross County versus Motherwell on Monday night. Apologies that we've not been able to do the podcast after that. I think we just felt that timing of the game on Monday night meant that it'd be a little bit difficult to do it late on Monday. And we've also got a show, the weekend preview, coming out, I think, on Wednesday night, so we can cover anything big that happens in Dingwall for that one. But yeah, Celtic Hamilton just finished, and finished 5-1 to Celtic. Odson Edward hat-trick, Jeremy Frimpong and Patrick Klimala scoring the other goals for Celtic. Scott Martin / Christopher Julien own goal. Hopefully not from my fantasy team point of view, although I did hear that Ian Crocker was certainly giving it to Julien for whatever reason. I've been kind of refreshing flash scores for the last 2 hours, and thankfully it's still down as a Scott Martin goal, so hopefully it stays that way. But yeah, a comfortable win for Celtic there. From Owen's point of view, didn't really feel Celtic were that spectacular despite scoring 5 goals. The goals are all pretty straightforward. Edward scored a hat-trick from, I think, a combined distance of about 10 yards. I mean, they were all absolute tap-ins that any of us could have scored. Klamala's goal is a kind of good striker's goal, a good run and finish into the corner. And Frimpong's is a better finish than any of Edward's, but it was a tap-in effectively as well at the back post. So Celtic, as much as the goals were created, I don't feel they had to... It's maybe harsh to say that, you know, they didn't really cut Hamilton open, because that's exactly what they did do. But in terms of being made to work really hard for their goals, I didn't feel as if Celtic were really. I thought the goals were quite cheap from Hamilton's point of view. But I don't want to have a total go at Hamilton, because I thought they were pretty good the way they played. And obviously, you know, Johnny, it was a bit of a free hit for them going to Celtic Park in the opening weekend.
That's right. And I think from a Hamilton point of view, they'll be having plenty of positives to take from the game. Especially the first half. I think the second half you can probably write it off. I think they struggled to create chances a little bit more, apart from towards the last 10 minutes, when I think, you know, they created a few chances when Celtic's foot was maybe off the gas, and when those sort of fourth and fifth subs were coming on, I did feel like it was kind of turned into a bit of a, had a sort of pre-season feel to it before Klamala's late goal. But in the first half, Hamilton would really impress me. Off the bat, they started really well. And there's obviously the save that Bain was forced into, where he tipped it over for a corner. And then there was a couple of chances they had from corners themselves as well. Obviously the goal, which is a total fluke, right enough. But certainly the first half, there's plenty of positives to take. Went 2-0 down, obviously. I thought they were probably a bit unfortunate to be 2-0 down, and deservedly went in only a goal behind. And then, realistically, as you say, Celtic come out, show their quality, bat Hamilton aside, which is certainly no embarrassment for Hamilton. You know, that'll happen to bigger and better teams throughout the season, there's no doubt about that. If Hamilton play that way against the majority of teams in the league, I'm sure they'll pick up enough points to stay up again, as we've had the discussion this week in the group chat. I can see them doing it again, even with a much changed squad.
Yes, they've got a very young squad, obviously, Hamilton this season, and I tweeted on the Burstball account on Twitter, funnily enough, about how young their defence was. I was looking it up, and I think, you know, you've got 18-year-old Hamilton in there, you've got 22 and 23-year-olds basically making up the rest of it, and I think the goalkeeper's only 24 as well, so it's quite a young, you know, a young defence. And we got a reply from Stephen D on Twitter, who's an Accies fan, and he says, "Believe me, we have been concerned about it being a lack of experience in defence for months." He says, "The club seemed to have no interest in signing a proven centre-back despite the obvious need." And from my point of view, I would be a bit fearful for Hamilton. I think with, you know, such a young defence there, they've got a lot of good players going forward, and they will score goals, and they showed that today with some of the chances they created. But I've just got fears about, you know, that defence, because I feel they need an experienced head, someone who's been there and done it in the past, and I don't feel they've got it there at the moment. Fisher?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think from my own point of view, not to have a go at Hamilton too much as they did. As Johnny mentioned, they were pretty impressive in the first kind of 20-25 minutes, but for me, I think they are comfortably the worst team in the league, although they are inexperienced, and I think that up against, obviously, Celtic, who I think it maybe took them a while to kind of get going, but if you're going to Parkhead opening day, Celtic are obviously looking to put down a marker for the season. It's going to be incredibly difficult. I think an experienced head at the back there certainly could have helped them, and certainly if there's a wee bit more experience at the back, then maybe Hamilton do see out the kind of first 10-15 minutes of the second half without obviously pretty much losing the game in that spell. But I did think they were fairly decent in the first 20 minutes. Certainly surprised me, as I generally thought, you know, I didn't think Celtic were going to come firing straight out of the blocks, but I certainly thought that Celtic wouldn't maybe have quite as much trouble in that opening spell as they did. But, you know, once Celtic got up to speed, it was kind of just par for the course, and pretty much where Celtic kind of, or they picked up where they kind of left off, obviously before lockdown, and just kind of swatted them aside easily in the end. But I mean, I never thought, although I say Hamilton for me are comfortably the worst team in the league, I mean, I don't think it's going to be like a kind of Gretna situation or anything ridiculous like that. I certainly think they're going to give plenty of teams a game, and I'm sure they will pick up results. I mean, they came obviously very close to picking up a result last season against Celtic, and then obviously beat Rangers at Ibrox. So whilst it's a slightly different team, you know, Brian Rice is capable of getting a side together that can get results. So I do worry for them this season, but I certainly think they'll be able to put up a fight. But again, you can't really read too much into them going to Parkhead in the opening day, because Celtic pretty much did what Celtic do at Parkhead and put them away and get the 3 points.
Yeah, 5 goals for Celtic, 3 goals for Odson Edouard. As I said, all of them pretty much tap-ins, but I guess it's maybe something to be slightly critical for no reason, basically, but it's maybe something he doesn't do enough, maybe tap-ins like that. Is that fair to say, Johnny?
Yeah, I mean, you want your striker to be in the right place at the right time, and he was. The first one's, I mean, if he's not there, there's no chance they're scoring that. It's a good ball in from Taylor, but he's pretty much in the only position where he's going to score from. And the same with the rebound. I think the rebound's a little bit more of a tricky finish. I think maybe, yeah. Was that the third one, was it? Just into the top corner. It was a little bit trickier, but as you say, that's bread and butter for your striker. He's obviously scored plenty of stunning goals, and those are the ones that win you games as well. So, I certainly think that's right enough. And obviously, I think the second goal probably comes into the inexperienced thing with Hamilton. The actual defender Hamilton as well, rather than the team. I think he was just caught off guard, really.
He's only 18.
Aye. He wasn't looking over his shoulder, and Edouard got in behind him. You can't really afford to do that. But as you say, I'm sure he'll learn. And if not, Hamilton maybe should go down the experienced signing route sooner rather than later.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Edouard, just for me again, showed he's far too good for the Scottish game. If we're totally honest about it, the way he plays today, barely broke sweat and still netted a hat-trick. I mean, that's the kind of thing you see the very top players doing in Europe. And I know all three of them were basically tap-ins. I think you're right, the final one was the best finish out of the three, but the fact he was there for all three just shows his awareness and being there in the right place. So really well done to him, really well done to Celtic. Obviously, they go top of the league, +4 goal difference and a comfortable start, although it's probably fair to say that they'll have tougher games between now and the end of the season. That was Sunday's match. On Saturday afternoon, we had the first game of the season between Aberdeen and Rangers at Pittodrie. Big cut and razor, obviously, Fisher, two of the better teams in the country. Obviously, the big caveat that there was no fans at Pittodrie, probably one of the biggest fixtures in our fixture list, effectively, and one of the ones where it's most noticeable when fans aren't there, because the atmosphere is usually such an important part of the game. What was your overall thoughts on the match? Rangers probably deserved winners, fair to say.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think we offered more, certainly going forward. We weren't ever really troubled defensively. I didn't think Rangers were particularly great on the day, don't get me wrong. I thought there was a couple of notable performances. Obviously, Balogun's came in for his debut and strolled it, to be honest. Kent, I thought, for the first time, and obviously we're going back to pre-lockdown, but the first time maybe since the Old Firm game in December, I've seen Kent really take the initiative in a game, and he looked to be driving us on. And Aribo just looked like a class act at times. I mean, he's clearly kind of bulked up, and throughout pre-season he looks to be taking a lot of initiative, looks to be trying to drive the midfield on, and I thought he was good with that as well. I know, kind of, I think it was Tom English had a bit of a pop at Morelos in his column today, but I thought Morelos was fine, to be honest. I mean, it was no worse than anybody else in the team. I think it was always going to be the case if he didn't score, you would have somebody saying, he didn't do enough. But, I mean, he set up Kent's goal. So I thought he was fine. I think all round, as I say, it's the kind of longest layoff the majority of these players are going to have had in their entire career, barring kind of major injuries and such. And to kind of have to go through a kind of bizarre pre-season and then start up away at Pittodrie, regardless if there's no fans, is never easy. So I'm just kind of glad that we got the win. And I know that there's been people saying that's the same kind of thing as last season, you know, playing teams that were kind of packed in and we couldn't break them down. But, I mean, the one bit of good play, or the one that we kind of had, we scored from, and to go away to Pittodrie at any stage and get 3 points for this kind of Rangers team hasn't ever been easy, as we kind of discussed on one of the podcasts last week. So I'll take that. I think it's going to take a couple of weeks for the better teams to get themselves going, whether that be Rangers, Celtic, even Aberdeen, etc. So, yeah, it wasn't the greatest game of football, don't get me wrong, but as I say, 3 points at Pittodrie is certainly something that I'll take every single time.
Yeah, interesting tactics, I thought, from Rangers in the early stages, and for most of the game, really, where you almost had Morelos dropping into midfield rather than running deep. And I think the idea behind that was to draw one or even both of the Aberdeen defenders in the field or up the park and leave space for the three runners, who are obviously Aribo, Hadji and Kent. And that's where you see the
goal,
Kent goal coming from, because there's all that space in behind, because Morelos has dropped in, and I think it's maybe McKenna goes with him, and then Ash Taylor's trying to play a crazy offside trap when Kent can see across the line. It was unbelievable defending for Aberdeen, but it was also strange tactics, I thought, for McInnes not to notice that early on, because I noticed it 10-15 minutes into the game that Rangers were doing this, and I said, why then do you not just pass one of the Aberdeen midfielders, Bryson or Ferguson, put him on Morelos, then he's not going to be allowed to draw your centre-backs out of play. I saw it. Another guy I was watching the game with saw it.
McCoist was making constant
McCoist
mention.
Was growing. And McInnes clearly didn't see it. And then, what do you know, 3 or 4 minutes later, Kent's going through, and you knew the minute Kent went through, he was going to score. So I just... it's difficult in the opening game of the season, because I know that teams haven't had a pre-season at all, and I know that they've not played games prior to this weekend in, you know, 4 or 5 months, I think it is. And I know that even Celtic and Rangers have probably had more of a pre-season than teams like Aberdeen in terms of the opposition they've played. But I just sometimes don't understand, you know, Aberdeen and how McInnes sets them up in these home games against Celtic and Rangers. I know they've got results against Rangers in the past, but usually I think it's more down to Rangers giving them goals or chucking away leads or whatever. It's very, you know, seldom about Aberdeen actually coming and putting in a good performance against either Rangers or Celtic at home. And yeah, I just thought it was disappointing, and you might disagree, Johnny, but I just think that, you know, if that was the kind of early signs of what we're going to see for Aberdeen this year, I'd be a bit worried about them certainly finishing third or maybe even fourth.
There's a time to get excited about or distraught about your team, and it's not after the first game week of the season. But for Aberdeen fans, I'm imagining that there was a sense of here we go again during the game against Rangers.
At least they didn't have to physically sit there and watch.
I know.
Positive, isn't it?
I mean, as Fisher said there, and it almost kind of sums up Fisher's analysis of the game as a Rangers supporter, almost sums up the game as an Aberdeen supporter, I'm sure, as well, because Rangers did nothing special on Saturday. Rangers didn't play overly well. They did enough, but they didn't have to do much anyway. You know, I mean, Aberdeen created nothing. I don't think they even had a shot on target.
Despite McInnes saying that they did.
He said that they had a shot in each half on target, didn't he? I don't know. Maybe he was watching a different game, but I'm certain they didn't have a shot on target at all. Maybe with no fans there, he's thinking, oh, blind a few folk, a blatant lie here.
Do you think the fact that there was no fans there had anything to do with that performance? That maybe you would the Aberdeen support allow you to play that badly? Because I don't want to take anything away from Rangers, because I thought Rangers did what they did, and they were never in doubt, and it's a really good 3 points to start the season. But to not have a shot on target, and the only chance I think they had was the
scramble
in the box, and when Balogun takes a really sore one. But do you think if they had a support there, that would have driven them on to at least get a few shots on target? As crazy as that sounds, seems.
Well, you would have hoped so, and I certainly don't think for a second that Aberdeen fans would have accepted that performance. I think they would have been very vocal in their displeasure of that performance, but whether it would have improved it is another question that I'm not sure about. As I said before, there was a sense of real familiarity to the performance. It's not the first time that we've seen Aberdeen play poorly at home to one of the Old Firm. They seem to have improved their record away at the Old Firm slightly in the last couple of years, but at home it has been drab, and I'm sure this isn't obviously most of the time that we see, just because of the way Sky Sports works, most of the time we see Aberdeen playing at Pittodrie is against the Old Firm and bigger games. But I'm sure they do play the same way against teams lower down the league as well. And I think it's getting to the point now where it is, starting to have an effect on the Aberdeen fans. They want to see more excitement, and they aren't getting it at the moment. But as I said before, this is coming from the past season, and or maybe even a little bit more in this season now. And I don't want to judge this season based on one game, so I am willing to sort of say put it down as the first game of the season and see how things go from here on in. But it certainly was a very familiar performance.
I think, to be fair, with Aberdeen as well, just to jump in there, Cosgrove being injured meant obviously they had no real focal point. I think obviously Curtis Main's out as well, so you're relying on Bruce Anderson, who obviously I know scored against Rangers 2 seasons ago in the opening day, but I mean, compared to obviously Cosgrove, he's not much of a presence, and he's still trying to kind of nail down a starting position in the Aberdeen team. And then you've obviously got Ryan Edmondson as well, who's literally just signed.
He looked all right when he came on.
Yeah, I mean, he caused, I don't want to say trouble, because I don't think Goldson and Balogun were troubled, but I think he was at least a little bit more involved than Anderson. But again, obviously Edmondson's literally just signed, 2 days before or something like that, on loan, so he's not going to be as used to kind of how Aberdeen are meant to be playing. And I think for all Aberdeen, I wasn't impressed with them, and I think I had a wee bit of a discussion yesterday in the chat about kind of my feelings in terms of if Aberdeen want to move forward. I mean, they're not going to get rid of McInnes after one game, but I think if things are kind of continue like this throughout the season, I think maybe just McInnes has kind of reached his glass ceiling with Aberdeen, and they maybe need to move on. But I think as poor as they, or as, not as great as they were, I think it's important obviously to state that without Cosgrove, that's a massive blow, because of how big a player he is, and he really does take away from that team, because there isn't just any real presence up front at the moment. So that obviously can't have helped either.
Yeah, Cosgrove out probably for a good few months. Curtis Main as well was a big loss for them, I think, up front. People forget that as well. And Bruce Anderson's clearly, one for the future. But I was looking at his goals record. I think he's, for Aberdeen, I think he scored 3 or 4 goals or something. So he's not a player you can rely on in the here and now. Just finally, Andrew Considine lost a rag. I mean, we're smirking. We shouldn't really be, because that could easily have been a leg breaker for Arfield.
It was just a bit of a strange one. I mean, I don't think he really needs to go in like that. I think McInnes, again, with these kind of bizarre post-match comments, said that he didn't think it was a red, which I found...
the most red you'll ever see.
Yeah, I mean, there was pretty anonymous agreement in the group chat and whatever, even in the commentary and that it was a red card. A bit of a strange tackle, and you even see in the replay Johnny Hayes' reaction as he goes in kind of sums it up.
Yes, moving on, after a good victory for Rangers, to the team who Johnny Clark is sporting their shirt, Dundee United.
Yeah, accusations of bias will be flying about here, but certainly
I
not.
Should confirm it's actually a Valencia top,
way top,
it looks very much like an Adidas. I don't even know if Dundee United's shirts are made by Adidas, are they?
It's Macron, sure. Is it not?
Emmanuel.
Moving on.
Anyway, Dundee United, St Johnstone, 1-1. I think the story of this game is that Dundee United with the better team get the early goal through Nicky Clark. Was it a penalty first off?
I think it's a penalty. Yeah, he goes in, he makes his body bigger with his hands, so I think that's a penalty.
Yeah, it was a penalty for me when I first saw it without the replay. I thought it was a penalty.
Nicky Clark's first ever goal in the top flight. It was his first ever game in the top flight, which I found a little bit surprising.
He's been obviously around the lower leagues with Queen of the South, Rangers, Dundee United, and then he was down south with Bury or Bury or however you say it as well. So, I was surprised at that, but then I kind of thought about it and was like, yeah, that must be right, which is weird because he's 29, 30 now, isn't he? So, but it was also, I think, quite a lot of folk were probably quite annoyed that had Shankland in their fantasy team, that he was taking the penalty in the first place.
Yeah, disappointing, because I was listening to the radio commentary and they said penalty Dundee United, so I'm thinking straight away, 2 minutes into the season, jackpot, and then just assuming that Shankland takes him, but apparently Nicky Clark's the designated penalty taker, so he scores that. Dundee United's looking the ascendancy, even more so when Michael O'Halloran gets himself sent off. Don't know what the hell got into him. He was just charging around. He probably... The first challenge he puts in when he gets a yellow card could arguably have been a red. Does he not go in the goalkeeper or something like that? And something that could maybe have been a yellow, and then he gets his second yellow. So he's clearly, you know, was chomping at the bit to play football and took it the wrong way and got sent off after half an hour or something. But then, if anything, that goes on to spur St Johnstone on. And Liam Craig, of all men, the guy who's given away the penalty, scores a really, really good volley. And St Johnstone, Johnny, probably come out of this game feeling better than Dundee United.
Aye, I think so, yeah. I mean, I think it was a kind of alluded to on a sports scene that two managers in their first first games with their respective clubs would have probably been reasonably happy. I think St Johnstone, though, as you say, will definitely be the happier of the two. Dundee United, you take the lead against St Johnstone, you're wanting to see that out. But I don't think it speaks great volumes for O'Halloran either that he's been red carded and his team have gone on to improve second half without him.
Callum Davidson even noted that. I think he said we were better when we went down to 10 men, which was kind of ominous.
Halloran might have been enjoying this half an hour, but I think he'll be he won't be enjoying much football for the rest of August, I don't think.
It's a strange match, because you thought when Dundee United took the lead that obviously they had no home support there, but being at home against 10 men, having, you know, such a good start to the season, lifting the flag, clapped onto the pitch, and then taking the lead so early that they'd go on and win that by a couple of goals. But it's maybe just a little bit of a reminder, and I know that St Johnstone are an established Premiership team, but it's maybe just a reminder to all of us that Dundee United aren't exactly going to be a team that's winning game after game this season. It's not as if they're going to be challenging for third or fourth or anything like that. They're a team that are probably, if we're honest, I'm not saying they're going to be in a relegation fight, but they're a team who the expectation should be like 10th, 9th, something like that.
Well, they're a promoted team, and you don't really think of United as a promoted team, I suppose. It comes with the cost of being called Dundee United in the Scottish Premiership. You know, they're one of the biggest six clubs in the country, so you're never expecting them to be in a relegation fight. I mean, especially not with Hearts out of the league as well. They are one of the biggest teams in the league, so you're going to expect them to be up there. But I mean, looking at the squads, there's not much between St Johnstone and United. I mean, I was quite impressed looking at the depth of St Johnstone's squad yesterday. Actually, likes Sean Rooney, who's a decent signing. Stevie May, obviously, on the bench, who's not been fantastic in the last couple of years, but he's a proven goal scorer. Craig Conway as well, obviously, ex-United. But there's a decent depth there. They're hard to predict, but as in terms of United, I think you're right enough that they probably will be further than. I was probably guilty myself. My pre-season, I think I put United fifth. They might still be. I mean, it's early days, but that's probably a little bit of a reminder for folk like me, who are, you know, expecting them to be where the name should be rather than where the squad should be, perhaps.
Yes, next game, Saturday, 3 o'clock. It was Kilmarnock against Hibs at Easter Road. We all know how it went. Victory for the home side. Rather than getting you two to comment on this game, I thought we'd get Killy Cow, who actually got to see the game. I won't incriminate him by telling you how he managed to do that, but he did somehow manage to see the full 90 minutes. I spoke to him earlier on before he went, I think he was going for a few pints this afternoon, so couldn't make it. But I spoke to him earlier on and he started by giving me his thoughts on the game.
I was actually very confident going into the game, and then when the team came out, it gave me a wee bit of the fear because we both had Millen playing right back and Waters playing left back, and obviously Dicker and Brophy were both missing anyway. That was the rumour. So realistically, you're going into that game without four of your starting 11. So when you take that into consideration against the Hibs team that everybody, including myself, have kind of spoken up on the field throughout. I mean, it's not too bad. I would say that Hibs definitely had the better of the chances, but I'd say the majority of the game was controlled by us, like, without a doubt. I think that I've actually still to see the possession stats, but just for watching the game, I think we certainly had a lot more of the ball. But that was a worrying sign in itself. That's what I'm saying. When you're down 2-0 in that period of time, I'm thinking, geez, it basically epitomises the game. In the first couple of minutes, we whipped that ball across the box, clear-cut chance, nothing goes in, and then 5 minutes later, your keeper runs past your two centre-halves, 30, 25 yards out with his goal, and then Hibs score for there. It was a tight game, and I'm no what to talk down the Scottish game again, because I can't talk it up, but I've got a wee concern that it could be similar to England with us, because as I said, I didn't enjoy any of the English games, but one thing that was evident, a lot of them that I seemed to kind of take in, there was a lack of chances created, and I don't know if that's anything to do with the crowds or whatever. Just going by the highlights of the other games, I thought that was a story. I watched the Rangers-Aberdeen game, I didn't think much happened in that either, and I think that was the story of our game. But I seen enough yesterday to not be worried. As I said, realistically, we had 4 of our starting 11 missing, your goalkeeper goes off at half-time. Really silly goals to concede more than anything, but I don't think that we'll be any worse than some of the other clubs in the league this year.
Yeah, just on the possession, 56%, Killy, which is not bad at all when you go to a ground like Easter Road, a team who have some good players that like to keep the ball. Just on the defence, both goals weren't particularly great. Obviously, the first much worse than the second, but even the second, I don't think the defending from Waters was particularly great. And I don't know if you'd blame the goalkeeper, but it was a shot into the corner, obviously, from Boyle, but it wasn't exactly a powerful shot. How concerning is it the way the team defended in that match when you consider that Killy over the last couple of seasons have been built on a team that doesn't give away goals like that?
No, that's a very, very good point, Hamish, because, I mean, our tactics are built around a sort of solid defence, and it'd be really hard to beat, and that's just two softer goals you'll concede at this level. That was really, really disappointing. I'm with you, I was a bit premature with the second. At the time I was slating the goalkeeper for that as well. Having seen it back, I definitely think Waters is more at fault than
backs
the goalie.
Off.
Yeah. Aye, but in the same way, I don't think that should be getting in. As I said, it's a good finish for Boyle, but it drags right through the 6-yard box, you know what I mean? It comes into the middle of the box and makes its way out, so I still think the keeper should be doing better. I don't think he should be getting beat for there, but I would still say what Waters was more at fault with that. Back it off, but it comes, I mean, everything's, the goalie's the last line of the defence, it should have been cut out before there. I think, to be fair, Big Tish dives in as well when he doesn't need to, when Alan knocks the ball into the middle of the park in about 10-15 yards of space he's got, just one touch past. And that was concerning as well. I thought Tish Bowl actually was one of our better players yesterday. I thought he played well, obviously Burke played well, and obviously I'm sure we'll come on to that. But we definitely did miss Gary Dicker in the middle of the pitch, because Burke and Power, Tish Bowl and Power, too often, and Hibs were really narrow yesterday. That's what our whole game was based on. Obviously, 3 centre-halves, Gogic playing the holding role, and then with Scott Allen and stuff in the middle, it was always going to be a kind of narrow game, and obviously Boyle running riot whatever he wanted. But certainly in the first half, they were coming right through the middle far too often for my liking, which, again, is concerning, considering we've meant to be really, really solid in there. And usually it's your Dicker and Power who are, you know, that's what they're there for. They're there to stop teams playing, and we didn't do that yesterday.
Yeah, we'll talk about Chris Burke now, because obviously that free kick was certainly goal of the weekend, barring anything magical in the last couple of games of the weekend. We're recording this prior to Celtic Hamilton and Ross County Motherwell as well. But brilliant, brilliant free kick. He absolutely goes for it. Top corner, just a fantastic free kick. I don't think you can really blame the goalkeeper. I think, like the Pope pointed out in Sports Scene, you'd maybe have had one more in the wall rather than having three. You'd probably have four in the Hibs wall. But there's an argument that ball goes into the back of the net anyway. Just a brilliant, brilliant strike.
Oh, unbelievable strike. It's just Burke just showing again that the class that he's got. I mean, he seems to be getting better every year. And that's just unbelievable goal. As you said, I mean, you couldn't make the argument that they should probably have somebody else in the wall, but he still goes goalie side there, you know what I mean? He hits it, you know, diagonally, if you get me, you know, he goes right across, and the way the wall was set up was obviously on the right-hand side anyway, and then Burke puts it into the left corner, so it's one of them. I suppose the keeper could maybe stand closer to his side if he puts somebody else in the wall, but unbelievable strike, and it's right into the top bin. Like, it's unbelievable, don't get me wrong. I've been trying to think of it and how critical I am at times in about my own team. And I think if we were to concede that, I would probably be asking more questions than saying, oh, what a strike. But sometimes you just can't take anything away for that. I mean, for that quality, for that range, straight in, pace, power. And Marciano's a good goalkeeper. I've slagged him in the past, but I think he's kind of won me over the last year or two, and he's been a lot better. So he's a good goalie. He's beaten a very good... good quality goalkeeper for that range, and I think it's now
in my fantasy team too, Marciano.
Is it?
Burke's free kicks cost me 4 points or whatever, so I'm not too happy about that.
No, that's it. But it's unbelievable, and I think that's now, I suppose it's almost like the Ryan Giggs statistic, but when he was at Man United, when it was every Premier League season until his last, but realistically, a forward player should be scoring every year. But I think that's Chris Burke, who's had these injury problems in the past, now scored in the last 16 seasons of his career, which is a pretty good achievement as well for him. So, and again, he seems to be our only real bit of quality in the final third just now. More on the creative aspect, hopefully Kilty gets a run of games. I thought he looked hungry yesterday, which was good, but he just didn't get enough of the ball where he wanted it. But in regards to effort and that, I can't fault Kilty for that, and I'm hoping he gets a run in the team as well.
Yeah, I'll ask you about Hibs in a wee minute. Just first off, obviously defeating your opening game, Easter Road, tough place to go. Second game, you've got Celtic at home. Obviously goes out saying that's a tough game. Is there a worry that if you don't get any points from your first two games, that the pressure ranks up on, I know he's not a new manager, Dyer, but in many ways he is. This is his first full season and we don't really know a hell of a lot about him.
No, it's one of those as well. I think that I looked at his statistics earlier, and I think he's 16 games as Kelly manager. We've won 4, drawn 2, and lost 10. So, I mean, that's a concern, considering, and there's been too much of that. Like yesterday, I thought we were okay. There was nothing to really be worried about, but we're still losing games. Whereas, and that was the exact same with the games just prior to this, when we played Hibs at Rugby Park. You remember it was on Sky Sports. We played really well that day, and we battered them, but we still lost. And that's not the way we should be. If anything, under Clark at times, we weren't great, but we were the ones picking up 3 points. And I'd say that as a concern, but I'm totally behind Dyer. I really want him to do well. I think that he should have been given the budget. Maybe he did, but I'm just speculating here, for him to bring in his own man as number two. Don't get me wrong, he's been at the club long enough now, he knows everything around about there. But Andy Millins, his assistant manager, who was the reserve, and obviously the reserve league's kind of scrapped this year for us, so that maybe seemed almost like just a promotion or to stop somebody else getting a wage kind of thing. But it's maybe no fair for me to say that, but I just think that Dyer, it would have only been fair for him to really bring in one of his own people to assist them during this. But don't get me wrong, Andy Millins get great experience in the game, no Scottish football inside out, played in it, coached at a decent level as well. So, but I just think that warning signs will be there, but when the fixtures came out, we knew it was going to be tough. But this was before our recruitment. I actually had us down for losing our first two games anyway, just talking to people. And I think we've got St Johnstone and Ross County back to back. Two of them are must wins, really, especially I don't want to say must win. I'm not wanting to put any unnecessary pressure on him. You know what I'm saying here. It's just two tough games to start it with. Ideally, we should have got a draw yesterday, and it's somewhere to build on. The pressure's off, yeah. And if you get a win, it's magic. But Celtic, especially the way Celtic are going, I can't. I'll obviously back us and hope we win next week, but I can't really see it. So when it comes to that St Johnstone game, I mean, we've really got to be taking 3 points for that, and then that gives you somewhere else to build for. St Johnstone, Ross County, and then we play Rangers at home. So we don't want to be in a risk into that Rangers game without picking up a point or only even picking up one.
Yeah. Just finally, obviously a lot of folk listening to the podcast would be interested to hear how Hibs were. New look Hibs, a lot of new signings. Gogic was playing, Nisbet was playing, a few others, I think. What was the overall feeling in them?
I think what we've seen once again is the pragmatism for Jack Ross in regards to... I don't think it's fair to say that he's got a set style. I think that he sets his stall up, who he's playing against, which I like in a manager, you know what I mean? And I think that, as I said, they were extremely narrow yesterday, but it worked. But you'll see them change who they're playing against like Rangers and Celtic. They'll probably be a lot more narrow as well. And then games that they expect to have a lot more of the ball, which, to be fair, I assumed that would be their game plan yesterday, but it wasn't. I thought Gogic was really good with them. Again, as I said, I think it was a back three they were playing, and then Gogic was just in front of them. So I need to take that into consideration. A lot of us, I can moan about us not creating enough chances, but a lot of that's down to Hibs' good defensive work, to be fair, and that's exactly what Gogic is there for. That's what they've missed. Him being there allows Allen to just, you know, give him the ball in good areas and let him do his stuff, and he doesn't need to worry about anything else because Gogic will be covering him all the time and screening the centre-halves and stuff. Again, it's a hard one to go on. It wasn't a great game to watch. Not a lot happened, but Hibs will be delighted to know be even at their best, and they would consider us a pretty decent team, a pretty solid team, and it's a dream start to the season. I mean, you can't ask for any more than that. Especially at this stage, it's just about winning games, and that's what Hibs are doing.
So yeah, spot on there at the end. A good victory for Hibs to start the season. Elsewhere, we had St Mirren beating Livingston. Guys, was this surprising result of the weekend for you, Fisher?
I'd actually probably say Dundee United not winning was more surprising, just because I'm willing to die on the hill that St Johnstone aren't going to be very good this season. But
yes,
I thought
stubborn double down.
I've built my trench, and I'm willing to die, as I say, on good. That hill. But I mean St Mirren, I wasn't confident, but I always thought that they would be decent this season. Livingston have been kind of consistently. Kind of all right since they've come up. They've done obviously a very good job in staying in the league and things like that, but I think this is one that we probably, if the scoreline was reversed, we'd have probably not have been too surprised, and for me I wasn't too surprised either. The only thing kind of watching the highlights is, you know, Livingston did have a couple of chances. St Mirren as well, could have been a few more goals in this game, but obviously a fantastic result for St Mirren, and it's the kind of game that if they want to avoid trouble, this is what they need. These are the games that they need to win. And as I say, for them, it's a massive result.
They've always kind of been slow starters, St Mirren, for whatever reason. I think they only won 7 games all of last season. Now, I know that was a curtailed campaign, but the fact they've got 3 points in so early and in a tough-looking game at home surely bodes well for their fight against relegation this season, Johnny.
Yep. Well, fight for the top six if you're to listen to their chief executive thing. But I had 1-0 St Mirren down for the predictions yesterday in the bar spot. I fancied them to win that. But then again, I've had Livy bottom of the league before really properly analysing their squad. So maybe it was just a result of that. But I just think St Mirren... Jim Goodwin's an interesting kind of character in Scottish football, because everybody knows this sort of tough guy persona on the park, and he was a tough guy on the park, but he's a teddy bear off the park. If you meet him, he's just a lovely guy. He really is.
He is. He's my firm choice for nicest manager.
Aye,
in Scottish
he really
football.
Is. He's a lovely guy. So, and I think his team have got kind of a bit of both of that. They're very sort of strong at the back, or that's how he sort of hopes they can play. But they're very also, this is talking about sort of Zalawa teams in the Championship, etc., in League One. They do play nice football as well, and I think St Mirren can be a little bit more than they'll just, I'm sure he won't be sitting in the dressing room saying to his players that they're just going to finish 11th or 10th and be happy enough. I think he's more ambitious than that, and I do think St Mirren could be a sort of surprise package a little bit this season. So, and that sort of result sums them up. If they can win games like that at home, keep clean sheets, they will do fine. As I say again, early days, but that's a sort of result they'll be looking to build on and looking to replicate throughout the season.
Yeah, I think I had them down for 10th place this season, and my feeling behind that was that they may be in relegation trouble all season, but I think a bit like last campaign, I always think that he'll have enough about him to get his players motivated to get themselves out of it. And if they really need a 3 points, like they need to beat a Ross County or a Hamilton or someone of that ilk, then I think they'll manage it. But yeah, I think they'll still be down there, but a really impressive victory for them, especially with a new goalkeeper and I think 4 new players in the back four as well. So I think they had a whole new back four plus a new goalkeeper. So to get a clean sheet in a game like that, fair enough, Livingston have some chances. I think Sybil that has hit the post in the first half, and Alan Forrest has a good chance in the second half that he just puts wide. And Lyndon Dykes was relatively quiet in my fantasy team, wouldn't you know it, as well. Him and Shankland had really quiet afternoons. But apart from that, the first ever game at Paisley 2021 Stadium, if it's still called that, with no booing at all. So always a real positive there. Plenty of shoots of recovery for St Mirren on and off the pitch. Yeah, guys, that's pretty much it for the games. Obviously, as we say, apologies to any Motherwell and Ross County fans. We promised to cover, or certainly give a reaction to that game on Wednesday night's podcast, looking ahead to the weekend stuff. We're also going to be joined by a pretty decent guest in that one as well, so more news on that nearer the time. Just to get our overall thoughts on the weekend, guys, Sky Sports, what did you make of their coverage? Obviously a couple of games, they had the one at Pittodrie yesterday and Celtic Park today. Did you see much of that, Fisher, and what did you think?
I thought the coverage of the Rangers game certainly was very good. Obviously, as I kind of mentioned last week, unapologetic Ali McCoy's fanboy, so always happy to hear him on commentary. It was quite refreshing, as it was a hell of a lot more upbeat than Andy Walker tends to be, certainly in Rangers games from my perspective. Thought the pundits were good, Boyd was good, Darren Fletcher was good, and the coverage overall on Saturday was impressive. Saw less of today just because I was out, and then as you can imagine, once Celtic kind of score 3 goals, it's kind of like, right, that'll do. But the coverage seemed good again. I do kind of hope that maybe Andy Walker's in his last season with Sky, because I think he could do with a bit of a freshen up on that front. But overall, I thought it was good. I don't know what you guys thought, I thought Sports Team was all right. Only issue I had was after every game they panned back and it was as if Craig Gordon had gone for like a coffee or something.
I know, it was crazy. Like, why were they sitting so far apart? Like, I get social distancing, what is it, 2 metres or whatever, but he was at least 3 or 4. I was like, he was in a different stratosphere.
Yeah, I thought at least they could have widened the camera angle, but I generally thought he'd actually, I think the first time after it came back from the Rangers highlights or something, I generally thought he was away for some reason. But and then obviously it kept happening and it was very weird. And as I mentioned in the chat, and I don't know if anybody else picked this up, but Shelley Kerr to me just sounds like Stephen Presley.
It's great shout.
It's very, very weird, to the point where it creeps me out. But apart from the point where she said, I think Dundee United are going to need goals, that was maybe the worst analysis I heard all weekend. But apart from that, again, I thought it was all right. Didn't necessarily agree with Gordon's comments on the Considine sending off, but overall, I thought the coverage was pretty decent.
Yeah, I thought the highlights themselves, which are the main thing that people watch Sports Scene for, were good. I think the fact they had a couple of new commentators in, I'd be interested to know how they were doing the commentary, whether it was live as the games were going on or whether it was in a studio in Glasgow. Probably the latter, but the fact that it was such a short turnaround from the games finishing at 10 to 5 basically until, I think it was 7:30, they went live Sports Scene, makes me think that maybe it was live. But the fact they had a new guy at Easter Road, and they had Rory Hamilton, didn't they, for one of the games as well, was really
United.
Good. And it sounded just a bit better. I don't know if it was just the novelty of having new commentators. Wasn't as fussed about poor Kerrydin Idsan on St Mirren. I don't think he's a comment. Well, he's not a commentator. He's a reporter. So I hope they'd maybe steer away from him and leave him to do what he's better at, because he's certainly better at other things than commentating. But the highlights were good. I thought they were maybe a wee bit lengthier highlights as well. That was quite good. And the novelty of having them on a Saturday night obviously was a big thing as well, and that'll probably wear off in time like everything else does. But great to be able to watch highlights of games that were literally played 2 hours ago as opposed to 24 or, you know, 28 hours ago. So I thought that was all positive. But yeah, I think the pundits could probably do a little bit of work. Same with Sky. I thought Sky were all right, but the pundits were agreeing with each other too much. And I think what BT did a lot of the time, and a lot of the time it was deliberate confrontation, but you quite like a bit of argy-bargy in the old pundit states, don't you? People disagreeing and it gets people hooked. So I'd like to think that Sky would maybe get in someone controversial, or literally just people like Darren Fletcher maybe being less kind of wanting to agree with his fellow panel members than disagree. But in the main, I thought they both did well, and it was certainly signs of recovery. Johnny?
No, I totally agree. As Fisher said earlier on, Ali McCoist's is huge for viewers, I think. He's just... Mm-hmm. The thing is, with... I'm not a massive fan of co-commentators in general. I know this is like a really kind of mental opinion, but I just don't think you need two people to actually talk about a football match. Like, you just, there's not really a necessity for two commentators unless they're going to add something properly. And McCoist does, because he's fun. He enjoys it. You know what I mean? Like, he enjoys watching football. He's just like, obviously he is an ex-player, but he doesn't come across like an ex-player. He comes across like a fan. And a well-informed fan as well, not just like, you know, some neep they've pulled off the street. Like, he is actually well-informed too. So, whereas I think a lot of the co-commentators on BT, on Sky, on everything, they never really add much, especially former players. I just think they state the obvious, which is the job of the main commentator. So I think McCoist does a really good job on that. And I think we should also give a shout out to Aberdeen, who were the only club to get two fans into the game. And that cherry picker.
Yeah.
Is that how Kelly Carr managed to get a view at Easter Road as well?
I've literally been sworn to secrecy in that. He told me, but said that wasn't to inform anyone, because he'd be looking at jail time if I did disclose it on a podcast as well renowned and as, you know, well listened to as this one. Right, guys, we asked you on Twitter for your three-word reactions. We're going to play a wee game. Let's see if you can guess what team these people are talking about. So, first of all, we've got comfier than expected.
Rangers.
Rangers, I think.
Yep, seeing as it comes from Gers fan 86, I would assume so. This is an easier one. Mon the Well.
Motherwell.
Yeah, that's obviously referring to the fact that that game hasn't been played yet at this point. Mike McManaman threw it away.
Dundee United.
I believe so. Chris McQuaid, business as usual.
Celtic. I think.
Possibly. I should know. I think that's one of Kelly Cow's cronies, so I should really know what.
it could be Aberdeen as well, couldn't it?
It could be. You could literally relate that to anyone, probably, maybe other than St Mirren. Matty G, someone send help.
That's an interesting one.
Hamilton.
I'll go for Aberdeen.
It could be Aberdeen. I don't know. I've just clicked in his bio there, and
Kelly, maybe?
Give anything away. And finally, this one, Turnstile Talk, Edward.
Hamilton, probably.
Yes. Nightmares. Fantastic. Right, before we go, guys, player of the weekend, Johnny?
Edward.
Fisher?
I'll go Martin Boyle. Yeah. Or actually shout out to Balogun as well, if I'm going to be biased, because I thought for his debut he was excellent. But I'll say Martin Boyle.
Edward, for me, goal of the weekend, Johnny?
Yeah, obvious one, Chris Burke.
Burke for me.
I'll, just to be different, I'll give it to Liam Craig for his volley, but Yeah, Burke, if I'm totally honest. And team of the weekend, Johnny?
That's a difficult one. I'll just, you know, I'll play it down the centre. I'll say Celtic. It was a convincing win. And back to where they're hoping to be at the end of the season.
St Mirren for me. And obviously at this stage, against a team like Livingston at home, to pick up 3 points is big for them. And I think they're going to have a surprisingly good season.
Interesting. I'll give it to St Mirren as well. Really impressive victory for them, and one I certainly didn't see coming. Right, great guys. Johnny, it's been brilliant to have you back in the podcast. Hopefully it won't be another 18 months before you return.
Aye, hopefully not. Hopefully it's we get the lower leagues. I can get some special
knowledge. I think it is about 18 months before they're back, in all honesty.
I know, I was thinking about the Highland League. I just don't know how that's going to be possible, so it'll be interesting. Anyway,
yeah, we'll maybe get you on at some point to chat about that kind of thing, because that's obviously your field of expertise at the moment. And Callum Fisher, thank you very much.
Pleasure. Good weekend for me and for Rangers. So delighted to come on.
Great. But most of all, thank you to you, the listener, for taking the time to listen to this show. If you enjoyed what you heard, please let us know on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. And if you fancy telling any pals as well, that would be much appreciated as well. We should be back later in the week, looking ahead to yet another weekend of Scottish football action. But in the meantime, take care, enjoy your week, and it's great to have Scottish football back.